welcome to Essential Work, exploring the past, present, and future of jobs. This podcast brought to you by the Battle of Homestead Foundation. I'm Nathan Ruggles. Thank you so much for listening. Every week, we bring you stories and struggles, people and perspectives, interviews and commentaries, all on the world of work yesterday, today, and tomorrow. We look at the most important issues people face on the job through a unique lens of history and time and music. If you're a history buff, if you like human-centered stories, if you face your own challenges on the job, if you're curious about what the workplace of the future will look like, if you are left dissatisfied with the same old newsy talk about current events, devoid of any perspective grounded in the past or without looking ahead, if you enjoy how music can provide an artistic window into issues, this is the podcast for you. Here in our fifth episode, we wrap up our focus on the struggles of food service workers with part three of our feature conversation with the nonprofit organization, the Restaurant Opportunity Centers, or ROC, and their work fighting to improve wages and working conditions. Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania organizer and former server Bobby Linskins and local barista and member of ROC, Abby Rideout, conclude our multi-part interview by detailing the particular challenges for restaurant workers under a pandemic and their hopes for the future. So, Bobby and Abby, you two have been talking to us about some of the challenges that you've both been facing and folks have been facing in the industry in the past. Now, right now, we are in the midst of a particularly challenging period, right, with this pandemic. And it has had a definite impact on everyone. Bobby, if you could just talk for a moment about some of the challenges that workers in the restaurant industry are facing right now because of the pandemic.
What I'm mostly hearing from restaurant workers now is just being afraid to go to work. They're forced to go back to work or lose unemployment benefits, but yet their employers aren't taking the necessary precautions to make them safe. There isn't proper legislation in place to help people feel safe. You know, the guests are protected by the restaurant workers who are wearing masks, but people can't eat with the mask on. And you can't serve somebody their food from 6 feet away either.
We talk about wearing masks and social distancing, but this industry, in order for people to be there in the restaurant, right, that those guidelines, those rules have to be violated on a fairly regular basis.
Right. And a lot of times the areas that the servers are given to work in is a problem too. The pantry that, or the station where they're going to get your drinks and whatever else they need to get for you, they're working on top of each other. They're not able to socially distance from each other either. One set of servers was telling me about how they all had to work in this like 3 by 3 foot space. And yeah, it's bad.
They're really in close proximity to one another. And right. And then Abby, so you were working as a barista. I'm going to ask you to go back about 6-8 months. So beginning of the year, were you working at a barista at the time in, say, January, February, March of this year?
Yeah.
So as the pandemic hit, what happened with you and what happened with your work?
So for me, it was literally everything changed in a span of about 4 days. Everything was operating normally. And then I remember having like a Wednesday, Thursday off was my weekend. And then I was going to work through the Friday, Saturday, Sunday into Monday. And I remember that being when conversations were starting to like kind of ramp up around it. When I went into work on that weekend, actually, there had been no memo or instruction from management they were still not saying anything to us, but the store lead that I worked at had gotten gloves and hand sanitizer and things like that, and was encouraging us to use gloves for cash handling and washing our hands more often and things like that. And then on Monday, I was at my second job, and it was sort of a similar situation. So I worked on Monday. Things were kind of weird. Tuesday, I was off. Wednesday, I got a text saying that we would be indefinitely closed at both of my jobs.
Wow. So your life changed in a very short period of time.
Yeah.
And when you're asked to say, okay, well, you need to wash your hands more, and you need to take the time to do that, and you need to take the time to use more hand sanitizer. So those things do take time, right? So what does that do to you in terms of your work and being able to accomplish everything you need to do and get that coffee going and talk to that customer and et cetera?
It slowed my work down so much. And on top of that, and again, like, these were my final days before like COVID happened, people got indignant and almost offended that I was putting gloves on to handle their cash. It freaked people out. They did not like it. A lot of people were fine, but there were people who were very much uncomfortable with the exchange. It took a really long time, especially when it was like a group of five guys who were all going to pay cash for one cup, small cup of black coffee. The exchange got 2 to 3 times longer than it had been. I know by the end of that, like Saturday, Sunday weekend, my knuckles were bleeding from excessive hand washing and dryness, which made the having to wear gloves and change them out a lot more necessary because my hands were just bleeding all the time. Yeah, it changed everything. It slowed things down. It made it a lot more uncomfortable to interact with customers. And I know that we're still seeing that now with people getting really upset over being asked to wear masks and things.
So then you found yourself unemployed. So then what happened at that point in terms of your income, in terms of how long did that last, in terms of your prospects for returning to work at some point?
Oh, that's a rough question. You know, it basically, I was laid off from 2 jobs in one day with no real warning or foresight. It took me 9 weeks to start getting unemployment payments sorted out. So I was very lucky to have a little bit of money saved up and a relatively inexpensive life to be able to kind of scrape and make it work until my unemployment did happen. But it took 2 months for me to get anything, and managing when there was the extra boost was really easy. It was probably the most secure financially I've ever been in my adult life. But now that it has dropped back down, unemployment is nowhere close to what I was making when I was working. And I know that there are people who are going out and getting jobs, and I know that there are still jobs in the industry. But the problem that I'm personally running into is that I'm finding jobs, but I'm finding no jobs that want to pay anybody to work close to full time. So the problem that I keep seeing is that, oh, we're hiring, but we're hiring for 10 hours a week. And, you know, as soon as you take one of these jobs, you lose these benefits. And you, as we all know, it can take 3 weeks for your paychecks from your job to catch up to what you've been working.
At 10 hours a week.
At 10 hours a week. And so that's kind of the wall that I'm running into is like, okay, well, if I take this job, one, is it actually going to be more than I'm making on unemployment, which is still next to nothing? And two, am I secure enough to wait possibly up to a month for that money to play catch up, you know? And I know here in Pittsburgh, the number is, it's over 100 different restaurants have permanently closed in Pittsburgh since COVID hit. So we used to be this big booming food service economy, and it has just tanked. And now any barista job that you look at, whereas a year ago, if I were to apply, I might be in competition with a handful of other people. Now you're in competition with half of the city's baristas if you want to go get that job.
And I can't imagine what the potential that does for the offering wage when the employer knows they've got a whole line of people willing to come in and work.
Exactly. You're not seeing any changes with wages. They're not going up, especially now that we have sort of normalized COVID. You're not seeing hazard pay anymore, almost at all. That has kind of gone out the window of as we have all accepted this as our new reality. And as businesses have run out of loans, I guess, to make that happen. So I know a lot of people who are new and coming on aren't making that.
So, Bobby, have you heard this whole hazard pay idea? Is this something that has that been common? Is it here and there? What have you heard about that, or what's your knowledge of that?
I actually haven't heard of it in the restaurant industry much. I have heard it for some retail workers, but most places were giving an extra $2 per hour. And I think when you're really risking your health, the health of your children or parents or whoever might be living with you, it's really not enough.
Well, especially as you've two been talking about, too many people don't have health insurance. So if you do get sick, what happens? Do either of you know anyone in the industry who has contracted COVID and has had to deal with health expenses?
Yeah, I do actually. I can't speak a lot on the expenses end of it because I know that they were getting some type of medical insurance and were freelance working at that point. They had been unemployed for a little bit and had started doing work from home. So there weren't so many of like the standard worker concerns. But they were sick for several weeks. For several weeks, they were not able to even leave the upstairs bedroom of their house because going up and down the stairs was too strenuous. I know that they have dealt with some neurological problems as a result of this that are still sort of getting sorted out. And this was a young, healthy person who, even though they survived it and are continuing to survive it and are starting to resume their life as normal, there are very much like parts of that experience that aren't over yet for them. And I know for me, it's what makes it so terrifying about going back is even if I don't have to go to the hospital and get incubated and get that hospital bill, will I be fired if I do get sick after just starting a new job?
And then in addition, going through what you've seen this friend of yours go through, just in terms of suffering through something like that. Now, Abby, when you became unemployed, what did you hear from your employer? Did you hear anything from them at any point?
Nothing. Both jobs declined to say much of anything to us as employees for months on end. There were a few social media posts made, but pretty much every attempt workers made to get any sort of answer from management about status and how things were going were met with silence or we can't tell you or we don't know or we'll let you know when we know. At which point, when that had gone on for a number of months, both jobs started to organize and try to ask for clearer communication and standards around the possible return to work when things started reopening in June, at which point both got pretty firmly shut down by both businesses.
So you're saying that the workers who had been laid off, who were anticipating the possibility of being able to return to work or being asked to return to work, and who had started to ask questions about what that looks like, you said those efforts were shut down.
Correct.
So what were the workers asking? And when you say shut down, how were they shut down?
So both places were asking for pretty similar things. The core of it was they wanted effective and consistent communication. They wanted to know that there was PVP and proper protective gear. They wanted to know that if there would be hazard pay and what that would look like. They wanted clear job descriptions because COVID has changed what working looks like, as we've talked about, and having a clear idea of what your expectations for work are in this new environment. And with one of my jobs, we, you know, organized with Rock, we did a petition, we finally got to have a conversation with management. And the first conversation went really well, and it seemed very collaborative, it seemed like it was going somewhere. By the time we had a second conversation, though, those of us who were on the call were told that the company no longer saw us as employees and that they could not make us any sort of promises that at some point we wouldn't see somebody else working our jobs and that there could just be no promises made that we would ever be called back to work and that we very well might be replaced.
Just to interject very quickly, that they kept trying to say that the company was not in a good financial spot and they didn't even know if they would be opening their location back up. We repeatedly asked them to not make promises that they were going to be able to reopen the location, but only that if they did reopen the locations, that they would call this staff back based on seniority and store affiliation. And they just said, we can't do that without any explanation as to why.
So the message to the workers who brought up these issues was, there may not be a place for you anymore. Specifically because these workers spoke up.
Exactly.
Yeah. And with the other job, there were attempts to organize, there were attempts to communicate. The workers repeatedly tried to have a meeting and a dialogue with the owner. The owner met them with absolute radio silence, continued to just not engage. And then after some time, the owner sent out an email essentially saying, thank you for all of your work. Our stores will be indefinitely closed because we don't have money to stay open. And that was it.
Either of these employers, did either of them reopen?
So one of them has reopened some locations, not my location. The other one has not at all. The other thing is a matter of public record at this point that both of these coffee shops did in fact receive PPP loans. I heard from both owners repeatedly that they had not received loans. They had no money. They couldn't make promises to workers because there was no money. But public record very much shows when they got those loans, that they got those loans, and how much of those loans they got.
If you could explain the loan from the federal government, it has specific reasons why those are given and specific purposes, correct?
Right. So the PPP loans were given out specifically as paycheck protection to try to keep employees on and getting some amount of income while the business had time to sort of figure out how to restructure and adapt to new circumstances. I know that a part of the deal with the loans was that if employers could use them on employees in this capacity and prove that they did, that those loans would be forgiven and would be forgiven relatively quickly. And they had a pretty short amount of time to spend the money, neither of which the two coffee shops I worked at did. Money that was very much intended to support small businesses with working class people did not get spent on those people.
So Abby, unfortunately, it sounds like for yourself, you're uncertain at this point what your prospects are for future work.
Yeah.
And certainly sorry to hear that. And Bobby, in terms of what you're hearing from workers out there and what you're seeing with other workers involved with your organization, what kind of certainty do some workers have or don't have at this point with what we're seeing?
I am definitely hearing a lot of uncertainty about what the future is going to hold for them. I'm also hearing a lot of people leaving the industry and going to different types of jobs, banking, retail, different things.
Bobby, in terms of looking to the future, I know things are very uncertain, obviously, Abby, for you as well. And what is Rock doing right now to try to look to the future and what they would like to see happen for workers?
Yes, we are working on trying to get some legislation in place to say that these workers have a right to be called back to their jobs if their place reopens instead of the employer finding new employees for less money. Because we talked about them being motivated to retaliate against workers who are asking for just really basic stuff that every employer should be providing. but they're also using it to get rid of employees who might be making a little bit of a higher hourly rate, and then they can just hire new staff at a lower rate. So we are working on that, and we're also working on developing some whistleblower protections so that employees can't be retaliated against for reporting their employer to the health department for not following proper guidelines relating to the pandemic or different things like that, because they're protected under the Fair Standards Labor Act from being retaliated against for concerted activity, but they're not protected for being fired for reporting their employer for these things.
So some whistleblower protections would be needed for those employees.
Yes.
And Abby, and for yourself, thinking about yourself or others that you know in your position, I mean, if you see yourself going back to work, or when you see yourself going back to work, if there's like one thing that you would like to see to happen to make you feel more safe or more secure, more confident in your workplace in the midst of this pandemic, what comes to mind for you?
I know that this is a big ask, and I know that there isn't a way to implement this ask, but just honesty. What I'm seeing over and over and over again is employers who either don't want to be honest because they don't have answers, and rather than just saying that they don't have answers, they give employees silent treatments. I don't know how to implement that. I don't know how you answer that. But I feel like there is so much just dishonesty and shadiness and choosing to be silent rather than giving the wrong answer that I think, especially under these conditions, is just dangerous. These are people's lives. These are their loved ones. You know, I get that nobody wants to give an answer and be wrong, but you can't play with people like this.
So Abby, if you can even imagine the world beyond this pandemic and thinking about your life experience in this job that you have, it sounds like, loved in certain ways, certain aspects about it really speak to you. What would you like to see to happen for folks in your position who are working as baristas to be able to have a life in this job? What are a couple of things you would like to see happen?
I would love to see pay bumps. That if you are a good barista in a bumping location, you can make some good tips. But the reality is that if you are in a smaller location, a less trafficked location, and especially if it's the winter, you can be working at these reduced hours. You can have an employer who pays you minimum wage because you make tips, and then you're going to walk out with $6 to $10 a day. Seeing baristas who are qualified and who have these skills to do this huge number of things all in one job, getting paid like it instead of getting paid like a minimum wage throwaway worker, because being a barista is a skilled job. I would like to see employers actually staff enough to give people time to be sick. I would love to see employers make sure that they actually have enough people to not endanger everyone else when somebody gets sick.
Or has, like you unfortunately told us, your accident you had, and that someone can step in, right, and fill in.
Right. Yeah. I'll say that, you know, everybody wants healthcare. Everybody wants paid time off. I've been in the industry long enough to know that the money coming in is just not really enough to do that in most situations, especially not in these smaller indie coffee shops. My bare minimum is just give people the ability to stay home when they're sick and pay them slightly more than minimum wage a little bit more consistently.
Very good. Completely understandable. So Bobby, what were you going to add?
I would like to see restaurant workers, baristas, all employees really be treated like the professionals that they are. To me, it doesn't matter what job somebody is doing. If they are doing a job, they are providing a service to society, and they deserve to make a living wage. They deserve to be paid enough, and they deserve to have things like paid time off. They deserve to be able to go to the doctors when they're sick, to be able to take care of themselves and their families. I would like to see that for everybody.
So yeah, the people have dignity on the job and respect.
Dignity and respect, absolutely.
And I think, unfortunately, just based upon your experiences for both of you, whether it's been this time of the pandemic or before, that too often we're not seeing enough employers respecting their employees for the time that they're giving, for the skill that they're giving, for the care that they're giving to their employer and their work, and that they deserve to have the dignity of a decent wage and to feel like they're being valued and that their lives are not being put at risk on a daily basis.
And basically, people are more important than money. You need to put your employees above your profit. I understand that business owners need to make money too, but if they would look to some of these other employers who already pay a living wage and give health care and vacation time and things like that, it is possible. When your employees are happy, they're more productive. They're going to work harder for you. You're going to get more out of them. They're going to be loyal to you. You'll have less turnover, less training costs. It's possible. Like, everybody can make money and have a good life. They don't have to be so greedy and so worried about only their profits being more important than anything else.
That sounds pretty reasonable. And Abby, if you had an employer where you felt like that was a situation where you were valued through both your wages and through honesty towards you, is that some place that you can imagine yourself being able to stay at for a while?
Oh, definitely. I'd love to meet one someday.
And I can only imagine that not only would you benefit from that because you have this great smile on your face right now just with that thought, but that your employer would probably value you having you there and having a barista who is happy in their work and be able to pass it on to their customers on a daily basis.
Oh, I'd hope so.
Very good. Very good. Well, thank you both very much. I've been speaking here with Bobby Linskins and Abby Rideout, both of whom are involved with the Restaurant Opportunity Center here in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Abby, I wish you the best, certainly, in the future and getting that position that you want. And Bobby, good luck to you in the work with The Rock.
Thank you.
And I'd like to thank you both for coming on. Bobby, thank you for your time.
Well, thank you for having me.
And thank you, Abby, as well.
Thank you.
And that ends our interview with Bobby Linskins and Abby Rideout with the Restaurant Opportunity Center Pittsburgh. If you haven't already, be sure to listen to parts 1 and 2. You can find those as well as the rest of our past episodes at essentialworkpodcast.org. Now, looking ahead, Dr. Patricia DeMarco will be back with us on the topic of green jobs and how that ties in with fracking and climate change. Now, Larry McCullough will also be back around with another song selection inspired by the week's theme and fill us in on the latest free online events and more hosted by our sponsor, the Battle of Homestead Foundation. Now, in the meantime, you can check them out at battleofhomestead.org. Now, they are a group of workers, educators, historians, just everyday people who have made it their mission to preserve, promote, and interpret a people's history. They draw on the significance coming out of that dramatic labor conflict that took place in Homestead, Pennsylvania in 1892, a site right outside of Pittsburgh where this podcast is produced. We invite you to join as a member or consider a donation. It supports all their good work and programming, including this podcast. Now, if you enjoy what you're hearing, share us on your favorite social media. While you're at it, be sure to give us that 5-star rating and a positive review on Apple Podcasts. That really helps us out. We're also happy to announce you can now subscribe to us on iHeartRadio. That's now in addition to all your favorite podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Amazon Music, and more. The whole list is at essentialworkpodcast.org. We also always welcome your comments and suggestions. Give us a call. Leave us a message at 412-326-9435. That's 412-326-9435. Or shoot us an email. The address is bhfpodcast.nathan@gmail.com. We'd love to hear your thoughts. You can find that phone number and email address in the episode description. We would also like to send out some thanks to all those who make this podcast possible. In addition to the program committee of the Battle of Homestead Foundation, we always count on additional audio engineering and editing from Angela Bachman. You can find out about her at thatsoundgirl.com. Our logo was designed by Brittany Sheets of bsheetscreative.com. And we have an original music theme composed and recorded by Jason Kendall. You can check him out at jasonkendallproductions.com. This is Nathan Ruggles. Thank you for listening. We'll be back here soon with another episode of Essential Work, exploring the past, present, and future of jobs. . 2021 has been a year of transition for all of us. At the Battle of Homestead Foundation, they have discovered new ways to advance their mission of heritage, education, and social action. They expanded their educational outreach to include a weekly online tour of people's history locations through the Charlie's Monday Marker video series, as well as far-reaching discussion of social and economic trends with the podcast Essential Work, The Past, Present, and Future of Jobs. They presented 7 timely online public panels featuring nationally known authors and historians. Topics included workforce shifts from heavy industry to healthcare, the women's suffrage movement, uprooted immigrant neighborhoods, protest songs in today's civil action movements, the 1921 Battle of Blair Mountain, historical roots of today's social philanthropy, and Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania's world-famous city steps. They establish a professionally archived labor history collection, thousands of documents, photos, recordings, and remembrances of labor history spanning decades. They co-sponsored the Blair Mountain Centennial in West Virginia, honoring a long-neglected part of U.S. history with a landmark Labor Day weekend of events. They built a new and more accessible website, which you should check out at battleofhomestead.org. They did all this with help, the essential support of all the individuals like you who enjoyed the programming, appreciate the hard work of the citizens, workers, educators, and historians that make it happen, and value their mission to preserve, interpret, and promote a people's history focused on the significance of the dramatic labor conflict at Homestead, Pennsylvania in 1892. In 2022, they'll present a new round of thought-provoking programming. Membership, along with special donations, is essential to their success. Annual membership is only $30, $20 for retirees or the underemployed, and just $10 for students. Join now at battleofhomestead.org. You can also choose to contribute at any of a number of special donor levels, and donations are tax deductible. Membership also provides multiple free admissions to a variety of historical museums and sites in the greater Pittsburgh area. Check out the details at battleofhomestead.org. As this singular year comes to a close, while we still may have much to be thankful for, we also all see the urgent necessity of doing more to share our progressive labor history to a wider audience and inspire a new generation of activists and organizers. Your membership and engagement ensures that the Battle of Homestead Foundation will continue to do just that. Show your support today at battleofhomestead.org. In solidarity, BHF thanks you and wishes you good health, positive spirits, and both peaceful and joyous days ahead.